You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the meeting grounds for spirituality and society, religion and culture.
Welcome to Expanding Horizons. I'm Daphne Treloar, and with me today is the Reverend Joe Lane, the minister at the Norwood Unitarian Church. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Daphne.
Most of us can probably think of an experience in a group, or perhaps in a particular place, or with a particular person, where we've come away feeling that there was something very special about that experience. This morning, Joe and I want to explore some of these happenings and why they might be so memorable. Joe, I know when you were thinking about this, you were reminded of a film you'd seen, which I have to say I haven't even heard of, that illustrated this quality very well.
Yes, that film was titled Smoke, and it was a story of a man called Augie Wren who managed a cigar shop on the corner of 3rd Street and 7th Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. Every morning at exactly 8 o'clock, no matter what the weather, he took a picture of the shop from across the street, and he had 4,000 consecutive daily photographs of his corner, all labelled by date and mounted in photograph albums. And one day he showed the album to someone who'd come into the shop, and that person pointed out to him that they were all the same. And Augie replied, "You'll never get it if you don't slow down." And he pointed out that they were all at the same spot, but the difference was in the detail, the weather, the light, the number of people, the traffic. Now I see Augie as a model of a spiritually literate person. He reads the world, in his case, one small corner in Brooklyn, for meaning. By its very nature, his project is rooted in the everyday. He knows how closely we may need to look to see the significance of seemingly ordinary and insignificant events. He understands that some of the most rewarding spiritual journeys are those that we take on our own block.
He's quite a wise fellow, Augie, isn't he?
The entire film revolves around Augie's cigar shop and the people who come into it, and the fascinating and touching friendships that develop in that shop. Sometimes people come into the shop to buy things, but very often they just come in to chat, to share a coffee, or sometimes a cigar with Augie and the other customers. The central attraction of the shop initially is Augie himself, although his attraction too seems almost invisible or unconscious. Augie creates a place where people feel accepted, where they do not feel judged, a place where through the quiet, non-judgmental, gentle atmosphere, people can most be themselves. And so although the attraction of the cigar shop is initially Augie, he has created an atmosphere where the attraction gradually becomes the shop itself, and the customers themselves. Somehow, the cigar shop has become a place of soul.
You probably wouldn't remember the local deli or store, Joe, as they were everywhere in my youth. And they were great meeting places for all the locals, and there was a great feeling of familiarity and friendliness. And supermarkets were just coming in the early years of my marriage, and they destroyed shops, such as you describe. And of course, the cigar shop is a bit different to a local store, isn't it?
Yes. I thought it was a stroke of brilliance for the film script director to paint a picture of such a soulful place in a dark, pokey cigar shop, an outlet selling tobacco, a place normally associated with peddling the tools of ill health, seediness, or even death. And of course, you could say, well, it's just a film, places like that don't really exist, and experiences like that don't really happen. Well, I wouldn't be so sure.
Neither would I. I know a man very like Augie. Some years ago, a friend of mine owned a menswear shop on a busy main road. This man worked there, and he had that special gift of relating to people so naturally and empathically that everyone going past that shop popped in to see Jack and have a chat, confide their latest drama or whatever. I think he knew the life history of everyone in the district. and lots of people didn't even pretend that they wanted to buy anything. They came in just to see Jack, and everyone felt cheered by the time they left.
Yes, yeah, since becoming a minister, I've tried to stop and listen and take notice of all the places that members of my various congregations have told me about that resemble the soulfulness of Augie's Cigar Shop. And I've taken notice of all the places that I've encountered that feed my soul in such a way. And when I first arrived in my former congregation in Richmond in West London, a member of that congregation named Amy told me of such a place. Now, Amy was in her mid-80s, she lived alone, and she had considerable speech and mobility difficulties. And she told me about a hardware shop near where we both lived. It was a good place to go, she said, for almost anything. The shop owner, she said, was very helpful. When she'd had trouble with her answer phone, she took it into his hardware shop and he fixed it. He explained to her patiently how it worked, and he wouldn't dream of her paying for any of this information. And for the first time I went in there, I was struck by how much laughter there was, and how the shop was always full of people chatting and laughing, and I very rapidly became hooked. I went in there every week for 6 years. And I went in there to buy anything, really. If I didn't need something, I'd invent a reason that I needed some gadget or other. And I went in there to chat and to laugh, and I always came out feeling better than I did before I went in. And that was despite the shop's owner teasing me mercilessly about anything and everything, and insisting that he had not set foot in a church for years, and couldn't fathom why on earth I or anyone else would ever want to be a minister.
Well, Joe, you're a tobacconist and hardware man, and my menswear salesman seemed to have one big thing in common. They all had a relatively simple and unchallenging job, but they managed to make it rich and happy, and I'm sure very satisfying for themselves, and all their customers, and infect everyone with all this pleasure and good feeling.
That's right. Likewise, over the years, it's been my privilege to come across a gathering of retired men, all of differing backgrounds, who met each day along the banks of the River Thames near my house in London, and they met there every day to fish. One of the great advantages of ministry, I think, is the opportunity it gives me to inhabit the community in a way I could never do in my previous 9-to-5 existence. And one of my mentors, the Reverend Dr. Nancy Crumbine, a Unitarian Universalist minister from Vermont in the United States, once said to me that all religions, at their best, do just two things. They do many things at their worst, but at their best, it's just two things. They ask us to slow down and to wake up. To slow down, wake up, and take notice.
Isn't that what these salesmen were doing? Their lives were less rushed than many people's, and they would listen and remember every detail and show a genuine interest and become a confidant. Many people don't have someone to talk to in that way. You're listening to Expanding Horizons on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. I'm Daphne, and this morning Joe Lane and I are discussing a great good place. Those special times where we feel in tune with surroundings and people and find in them a source of inspiration and renewal.
Yes, it was on my daily walks along the River Thames, sometimes walking my dog, sometimes walking in hope, in desperate hope of inspiration for Sunday's sermon, and sometimes during my two breaks from ministry on maternity leave, pushing my babies along in their pram, that I met these gentlemen. They numbered between 6 and 8. They were all retired, and they were all widowers. They arrived each morning around 10 a.m. They brought with them their folding chairs, their umbrellas if it was raining, and beach shades when it was hot. They brought their picnic hampers with sandwiches and cakes, their thermoses with hot tea, their fishing rods, and all their fishing paraphernalia. They were always accompanied by one or more scruffy-looking dogs. And I often stopped and chatted, and I seemed to have acquired some sort of honorary status amongst them. They chatted about all sorts of things, religion, politics, marriage, divorce, widowhood and loneliness being amongst them, and of course the more prosaic things of life. It was truly touching when one of them lost a very much loved old dog, and the others comforted him in his distress and in his embarrassment about that distress. They did many things for each other, this unlikely bunch, but one thing I never ever saw them do was catch a fish.
those men were very fortunate to have found solace, I suppose it really was, in each other. Now, I know you're talking about these relationships in a wider context as something for everyone, but I'm struck with what they do for those who don't have a wide circle of contacts. And when I've been working in the community, one of the big things that impressed itself on me is the number of people who are very isolated, perhaps at odds with family or separated from them, and with no friends. I've had them ask me, how do you make friends? All the instances we've talking about are of people in some way filling that space.
They are. But it seems we all have an innate need for these informal places of meeting and sharing. They don't take the place of our formal associations, our families, our workplaces, our sports clubs and hobby groups, our therapists, our doctors, our church communities. Instead, they augment all these experiences and associations and add to our spiritual and emotional repertoire.
I can understand that. I have a really good circle of friends to share experiences with, as well as family. But I can still be infected by meeting with someone who gives me another perspective on life. I had a window cleaner who did that. And from the very first visit, I heard about his life and how in his mind, every experience always led to good. It was a life like most, with his shares of ups and downs, but he always made the downs count for something. He said he was blessed, so the downs were temporary and good would come from it. I knew quite soon that we had a different religious philosophy, or at least a different way of expressing it, because I like to look for the good in things too. But I found him so joyful and irrepressible and positive that when he left every time he did the windows, I felt that he'd made my day. I recommended him to some of my friends, and they all found the same. He had a wonderful spirit, and it had a remarkable effect on one.
The North American sociologist Ray Oldenburg has spent his lifetime researching such informal associations and their benefits, and he's written about his findings in a most interesting and challenging book titled The Great Good Place: Cafes, coffee shops, bookstores, bars, hair salons, and other hangouts at the heart of community. Ray Oldenburg has studied such places as barber shops in Turkey, sidewalk cafes in France, beer halls in Germany, coffee houses in Vienna, pubs in England and Ireland, and soda streams and lunch counters in the Midwest of North America, as well as grocery shops, hairdressers, playgrounds, and park benches the world over. He refers to these places when they work, that is, when they provide for us that elusive soulful quality that we all find so hard to define, but know in an instant when we experience it, as third places. First places, he says, are our families, both nuclear and extended. Second places are our places of formal affiliation, our workplace, the sports club, our church community, the photography club, the amateur dramatic society, our physiotherapist rooms, or our therapist's office. The third place, by contrast, is informal. The value of such places is subtle and understated. However, they are as vital to our emotional and spiritual development as all our more formal associations and commitments, and we overlook them at our peril. There are some things that these third places can do for us that Ray Oldenburg says our first and second places just cannot do for us, or not nearly as well as can a third place. See, these third places, these informal public meeting places, are great levellers, and they can more than any other experience expand our horizons, our associations, our minds, and expand us generally. Third places, park benches, bus stops, hardware shops, barber shops, and the playgrounds where parents and children meet, do not select from formal criteria for membership, and conventional status counts for little in these places. For as hard as we all might try to make our formal associations diverse and inclusive, all of us tend to select friends and associates from among those closest to us in social rank, and we tend to mix with people who are like us, who have backgrounds like us, who live like us, and who like the same things and have the same interests as us. And as valuable as such mutual associations are, over time, they can insidiously narrow and restrict and confine us. By contrast, the informality and egalitarianism of third places can expand us. They can open us up to new people, new experiences, and new possibilities. They can liberate us from the roles that our more formal associations demand of us.
We have to be prepared to open ourselves a little to enable the process to start. I often observe other people when I'm out for a walk. I usually smile and say good morning to those I meet. And there are some who you know aren't going to respond. They avoid looking at you and they hasten past. The people who I've had long and interesting conversations with under those circumstances you've been talking about have often been hard to resist. I remember a lady I sat next to on a flight from Singapore to London, and we struck up a conversation and had 7 hours talking about everything under the sun. And we both enjoyed it enormously, but we've never seen each other again.
I'm endlessly fascinated, and at the same time I'm humble whenever I hear of the richness and depth of such places and roles that these sort of places play in people's lives. And in my former part of the world, the River Thames was such a place for people. And indeed, I did not have to walk very far from my front door to see evidence of this. As I walked along the Thames towpath, I always used to read the memorial inscriptions on the park benches that lined the path. And they were testament to the importance of place in our lives, of the importance of these third places, these great good places in our lives. Peter Fraser Cole, CBE, a Scotsman and a Londoner who loved the river, said one. John Young, it was a wonderful journey, with thanks to old Father Thames, said another.
We have a couple of family places like those. My husband always loved the sea, and in particular Brighton Beach. We spent many happy hours there when the children were young, swimming and playing cricket. And as we got older, the two of us would often walk along the beach. That's where he wanted his ashes scattered. And he's often in my mind when I go down there for a walk. And as a family, we have a memorial tree in the Waite Arboretum. And periodically, we have a family picnic there. And the kids all play and have a lovely time. But it's just a nice place to sit and remember.
When I worked in London, many people in my congregation had such a connection with Kew Gardens. Some of them had lived alongside this beautiful place of botany and history all their lives, and it had been a place of refuge for them on weekends when they'd spent their working lives working amongst the noise and concrete of inner London. And in retirement, it was for many of them a place to discover unexplored talents and passions, where they worked for many years as volunteers in the gardens. And now most of them, in their 80s and 90s, still manage to visit the gardens weekly. One woman who lives alone sits in the gardens each week, reading and writing letters and opening her mail. And she said to me that during that time in the gardens, she feels her loneliness, her chronic pain from arthritis, and her worry over financial difficulties disappear. The gardens are, she says, for her, a sacred place. And for those who are unable to visit Kew Gardens so regularly, I'd been honoured many times to accompany them there for such special occasions as 80th birthday parties and golden wedding anniversaries. And I have a much-loved photograph in my study of a church gathering for such an occasion, complete with wheelchairs, prams, walking sticks and nappies. And the smiles say it all.
It occurs to me that here in your new appointment, you may have such a place laid on, as it were, in a little chapel in the Adelaide Hills that we speak of fondly as Shady Grove. Many of our listeners would not have heard of this little gem of history that's nestled in a patch of scrub, and it's been a Unitarian meeting house since the mid-1850s. Vesper services are held there regularly, attended by the descendants of some of these early families who are buried in the graveyard. It's a place of quietness, of great charm, very much part of the natural countryside, and with real meaning for many who do not even have the family connection. The maintenance and preservation of the bush is also very much part of our love for Shady Grove. It's a place to get away from so many of our everyday feelings of noise and frantic activity and modern excesses.
As we move through the rich and complex story that is our lives, may we not dismiss these third places as trivial and inconsequential. As we negotiate the maze of human experience, let us know that mercy and compassion can be dispensed in the cigar shop, the playground, and at the bus stop, as well as at church and within our families. That horizons can be broadened in a conversation at the hairdresser's and at the hardware store, as well as at work, school, and university. That understanding, insight, and wisdom can be gained on the train to work and walking along Linear Park. And that friends can be made walking the dog, catching the bus, and taking the children to the playground, as well as all the formal places we normally associate with such experiences. May we all stop to notice the orgies amongst us, and may we all recognise our own cigar shop and bus stop experiences for what they are, yet another opportunity to discover the sacred in our midst.
You've been listening to Expanding Horizons, which has been produced in the studios of Radio Adelaide by members of the Unitarian Church of South Australia. We welcome visitors to our meeting house at 99 Osmond Terrace, Norwood, on Sunday mornings at 10:30. You can find our website at adelaideunitarians.org.au. Here in Adelaide, we have Australia's number one community radio station. If you value the standard and commitment of Radio Adelaide to you, its listeners, consider becoming one of its subscribers. Call 8303 5000 in business hours.
And that's our episode of Expanding Horizons for the week. The introduction is a piece named Elements by the artist CDK. The piece is licensed under Creative Commons and can be found from a link on our media website. And be sure to visit our media website, unitariansa.wordpress.com. This is White Rabbit, out.